Welcome to the Public Morality. The Second Amendment reads, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. We often hear Second Amendment debates in the aftermath of a horrific mass shooting, but this one comes as a result of the coronavirus. The enacting shelter-in-place mandates by state governors sparked charges that government was abridging the liberties of its residents. Protests in Michigan not only sparked First Amendment constitutional questions, but also Second Amendment issues. I'm joined by Joseph Haynes Davis, an expert on the Second Amendment. Davis has provided commentary on numerous media outlets nationwide, specifically on the Second Amendment. Joseph Haynes Davis, welcome to the Public Morality.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Let's begin first to frame this conversation and just briefly, generally, how do you see the Second Amendment?
Well, I see it the way it is. It's a Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. It is part of the Bill of Rights, meaning the first 10 amendments, and it is a civil right that I believe, for whatever reason, the mainstream civil rights community has looked over, has eschewed it, if you will, has dismissed it, and has demonized it as for what it is, which is, for me, the cornerstone of liberty and freedom in this constitutional republic. It distinguishes this constitutional republic from every other so-called democracy around the world. For instance, just recently, in Canada, with a stroke of the pen, the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, banished, made illegal, and otherwise confiscated at least 1,500 types of firearms with a stroke of a pen from the citizenry of the Canadian nation. Here in the United States, on the other hand, matters like that would have to be a legislative amendment. Again, for instance, the 18th Amendment, which was the amendment prohibiting alcohol, was subsequently amended, for lack of better terms, by the 21st Amendment, which ended prohibition. So we have a bedrock staple of freedom in the Second Amendment, and I stand by it. I'm one of the more fire-breathing defenders of the Second Amendment in the nation. And I'm an American. I just happen to be Black American.
Okay. Okay. With that said, you know, one of the things I know you also, you're an attorney in Florida, which is also noted famously or infamously, however one wants to look at that, with the Stand Your Ground law. I mean, I'm thinking four laws, four cases in particular. I'm thinking about probably the most famous is the Trayvon Martin case, which you gave a lot of commentary on. Then there was Marissa Alexander, who allegedly fired a warning shot. Then there was a gentleman by the name of Michael Dunn, who shot a young man, killed him at a convenience store, and then drove off. And then there was, I think it was Michael Draca, who shot a man as he was backing away, also at a convenience store. So I want to ask you to adjudicate those particular cases, but talk about what Stand Your Ground law is and how should it actually work, in theory, is your understanding as an attorney.
All right. Well, thank you for not asking me to adjudicate those prior cases. Florida Statute 776.012 is the so-called stand your ground statute. And then you've got 776.013, which is the Castle Doctrine. And then you have 776.032, which is the statute for civil immunity. If you use one of the other statutes in self-defense, 776.032 allows for civil immunity so that no one can sue you for using a firearm in self-defense, whether it's in your house, that's 776.013, or out on the street, which is 776.012, the so-called stand your ground statute. Also, the stand your ground statute, 776.012, has been expanded to include warning shots that was subsequent to the Marissa Alexander case. And so you're asking me how they should be, quote unquote, used. So let's start with 776.012. That is the so-called stand your ground statute. In other words, you're out on the street. And let's just say you're walking down the street, or let's use an even better scenario, because you had a situation like this over in Mississippi. Let's just say you have been at a education conference here in the state of Florida. And you go to your hotel room, you know, you sleep for the night, and you come out at 5:30 in the morning, and it just so happens as you are walking to your rental car to have it returned, there are some people who, for whatever reason, are having a kill a Negro night, in some violent white supremacist club, because this is what happened over in Mississippi. And so they come up on you thinking that you are a great opportunity to kill a black man and run over him with a truck after they shoot him. Okay? But by yours, you know, by your diligence and your being prepared, you pull out a semi-automatic handgun. I would prefer in that instance a Beretta 92 FS 17 round 9 millimeter with hollow points in it. And you take the three out, like you just wear their butts out in self-defense. That is an instance where stand your ground is applicable and should be applied to that instance because you acted in self-defense. You had a right to be where you were. In other words, you had a right to be on that parking lot because you were a patron at that hotel. You were minding your own business, and you had no duty to retreat given the fact that they were coming at you to try to make you a martyr of some kind. They were trying to get into some white supremacist club. In that instance, stand your ground will be applicable. Now let's use the same, and that's stand your ground for taking them out by shooting them and eliminating. Now, let's use the same scenario, but instead of you taking them out, you fire five rounds into the air as warning shots to make them run away. Because for some reason, you say, well, I don't want to kill them. I just want them to run away and leave me alone. So let's say you do that and they run away and they don't come back and they leave the truck there, which is evidence, so that possibly the authorities would track them down and then bring them to trial because you have that evidence. Well, that's the warning shot instance. Okay? So let's now move to 776.013, which is the Castle Doctrine. And that's the one that's applicable when you're in your house. Now, that one's pretty easy. But let me give you this scenario because it's one that I had. Let's just say you're in your home and you go to sleep. You accidentally leave your garage door up and you accidentally leave the door to your garage open, which I did because I was going to go out back out and wash some clothes, but I forgot about it. So I'm in my bed, October 16th of 2006. And at 3:30 in the morning, I hear my alarm chime go dee dee dee. I'm thinking maybe some varmint or a dog or whatever got into my home. Okay, because I couldn't figure it out. Well, I turned over in my bed and I looked down the hall and I saw a human shadow on my wall down the hall. Well, I had a 12-gauge shotgun at the end of the bed, and through my own negligence and mistake, it was not loaded. But to my right, I had my K-frame 357 six-shot 357 Magnum made by Smith & Wesson. So I picked that up, came around the corner, and fired five rounds down the hall. Now, I missed the intruder, so when the cops came, they didn't charge me with anything because of 776.013, which is the Castle Doctrine, okay? Because while there was no forced entry, he was still an intruder. In other words, I didn't invite him in, and I didn't know what he was going to do, and it was 3:30 in the morning, and it looked to be a white male or light-skinned Hispanic. So that is the three statutes. Oh, 776.032 is if you do eliminate someone in self-defense lawfully. 776.032 of the state of Florida prohibits the estate of the deceased to sue you for wrongful death. Okay? And that's what prevented in the Zimmerman trial, in the Zimmerman matter, also known as the Trayvon Martin case, it prevented the Trayvon Martin estate to sue George Zimmerman personally for wrongful death because he was exonerated in the trial represented by Mark O'Mara, who I can say is a friend of mine.
I want to move and get some of your thoughts. So I'm here, if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Joseph Davis. We are talking about Second Amendment in particular, but there's some specific cases, and probably the most recent area where the Second Amendment has come up, ironically, has been a result of the coronavirus pandemic. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer issued a rebuke of the armed protesters recently who had gathered inside the state capitol in defiance of the statewide lockdown. Do you see them, those protesters, as operating within the framework of the constitutionally protected Second Amendment?
Yes. And the answer is yes, yes, and yes. And let me say something here. The reason why the protesters were able to open carry on the state capitol is because of the Michigan legislature allowing, apparently, again, because I'm a Florida lawyer, not a Michigan lawyer, but apparently the Michigan legislature allows for open carry on state grounds property. They would not have been able to do that if it was prohibited. And let me also say to you that most gun owners are law-abiding citizens, and they are going to assert their Second Amendment constitutional rights, period. Whether other people who are fearful and intimidated like it or not. And let me say this about these people who went to the state capitol with open carry. The next week, because the assertion has been, well, if that had been a group of black people, it would have been different. I reject that because the very next week, armed black people, black men, went to the same state capitol, yet for a different purpose. In other words, they were there to escort this black American female legislator
Sarah
into
Anthony.
The Capitol because, yeah, and whatever her name is, and I don't mean to be dismissive about her name, but they did it presumptively for her protection. So the issue becomes whether or not open carry is lawful on the state capitol grounds in Lansing, Michigan. And the answer is yes, and it happened no matter what the race. Now, people will say, well, they were demonstrating and the other people were escorting. It didn't matter. It was still open carry, lawfully done. Nobody got arrested. And let me further say, I doubt respectfully if those same black people, those black men who escorted the legislator into the building would be protesting against the governor, because the governor, respectfully, is not only a Democrat, but they may have agreed with her lockdown citation. I would also make the argument, because I have, these executive orders exceed the constitutional limits of the executive themselves. Now, people have abided by it, and nobody has challenged it in the Supreme Court. But I would submit to you, these executive orders exceed the constitutional limits. And I would also submit to you the following. The Constitution is not suspended just because everybody gets sick.
Say more.
That's it.
No, you said the Constitution is not suspended. I was wondering, were you suggesting that somebody has suspended the Constitution?
No. Listen to what I'm saying to you. The Constitution of the United States has not been suspended just because everybody gets sick. What I'm saying to you is that we have to always, to me, and this is just my opinion, we have to always hold tight to the constitutional freedoms, because once they are taken away or once they are suspended, it's hard to get them back.
But okay, what I'm trying to understand, sir, is are you saying when you said the Constitution is not suspended because of COVID-19, are you suggesting that someone has attempted to suspend it?
No, what I'm saying to you is that these local orders, these local shutdown orders, when I say local, statewide or citywide, municipal, this, that, and the other, exceed the constitutional limits of the folks that have issued them. That is my opinion. That is my argument. Now, people, the community, the citizenry, for the most part, has abided by it. and they have abided by it out of fear, out of their own choice, or whatever. What I'm saying to you is that no one has challenged them in the United States Supreme Court. Now, they have been challenged in some local communities, statewide or in the circuit court, etc. In other words, here in Florida, a barbershop, I think it was a barbershop, challenged it in the circuit court, and they won. And so the governors of the different states, and again, I can use my state here in Florida, they have been cautiously, quote unquote, opening things up. Now, my point is, when you shut everything down, people obliged it. In other words, they followed it. But someone could have challenged that on constitutional grounds if they, you know, if they chose to.
Yes, what you're raising right there, though, we've moved from the Second Amendment. You've gotten us into the Tenth Amendment because you're raising issues of federalism, and the states do have the responsibility of health and welfare. And I guess that could be the contrarian argument that you're putting forth.
Absolutely. The Tenth Amendment allows for different localities to do what they need to do. But you had mentioned COVID-19.
Right.
And so getting back to the point, and thank you, getting back to the point, but still even talking about the Tenth Amendment. The Tenth Amendment is the reason why, when it comes down to the Second Amendment, you have different, for lack of better terms, rules for gun ownership in the several states. For instance, in Illinois and California and New York and New Jersey, they treat gun ownership the way they do. And states here in the South, it differently. So you're absolutely right. The Tenth Amendment is relevant to this issue of the Second Amendment and self-defense with lethal deadly force. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right?
Well, let me ask you, are you concerned at all that, because you had mentioned Representative Anthony having her escort, and you're absolutely right, she was escorted by a number of men and women, African-American men and women, to her office.
Armed.
So are you concerned that you have armed protesters that are in the state capitol, the response to that is armed escorts by legislators who are in fear, and so the armed escorts. Are you concerned that just creates an escalation and moves us closer? You talked about liberty earlier, but our country's also been governed by ordered liberty. So then that attacks the fabric of the social order.
No, because there's two different days.
Two different days. How?
She didn't get escorted during the time that there were the armed protesters who were protesting the governor's stay-at-home orders, mm-hmm, and shutdown orders. It was the next week. There's two different days.
But how does the day? I'm about just the risk of escalation overall. You don't think it? I'm asking you if whether or not you thought it risked that escalation, even though.
No, I don't. See, I don't, in terms of the Second Amendment and me as a Black American, I'm not going to be, and this is just me, I'm not going to be fearful of asserting my right. If it's open carry for them, it's open carry for me.
All right. So with that said, is there a line that that we have to, because as you've eloquently stated, that we have to protect, you know, Second Amendment rights. But is there a line, though, that we maintain safety in public spaces, and which I would include that you also should have the right not to feel intimidated? Is there a line we can find there, or is it just one way, I have a right to my gun, and whether you feel intimidated or not, oh well?
I think it's the second one, because the first one propagates fear. And that's been, to me, it's been a problem with the mainstream black political orthodoxy. They have propagated fear. They have propagated fear as to the embrace of this Second Amendment right. Let me tell you something. And I don't know if you read that article from Ebony Magazine, November 22nd of 1959. Were you able to review that?
No, I didn't get a chance.
Okay, let me tell you about it. Okay, my father is the late Dr. Miles Dewey Davis. I am the I'm the baby half-brother of trumpeter Miles Davis. My father and my mother, who is the second wife of Dr. Davis, owned a 160-acre farm in southern St. Clair County, Illinois. They bought it in 1947 in a town called Millstadt. Millstadt was a 100% German-American immigrant enclave outside of St. Louis, Missouri, on the Illinois side, again, in St. Clair County. And so when they bought this 160-acre farm, they were the biggest landowners, not only in the city, not only in the county, but throughout southern Illinois, black Americans. So as you can imagine, there were some attempts at intimidation, okay, by whomever. It could have been the Knights. It could have been some quasi-Nazi sympathizers, since it was a German enclave. I don't know who it was. But my mother and father didn't call the sheriff. My mother and father didn't call the Millstadt police. They didn't call the state police. They called Smith & Wesson, each one of them, called Smith & Wesson 12-gauge shotguns and shot at the people who were trying to intimidate them, okay? And then, subsequently, by a miracle, everybody became friends. In fact, the people used to call my mother and father and ask permission to cross the road in front of the house. It's all there in the Ebony article. This is no fable. So I use that example to let you know that, in my opinion, is how you're supposed to act with your constitutional rights, okay? And the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree with their son, because I am not going to be fearful of my constitutional rights, and I embrace everyone. And respectfully, you cannot find anyone in this country, let alone on this planet, that is more pro-Second Amendment in terms of self-defense than me. And that's the reason why I guess you have me on your show today. And again, thank you for having me.
I want to end on this, though, because you said something earlier. We're talking about Michigan. And you mentioned that the Michigan legislature has made it legal to open carry.
Apparently.
We'll hold you to that. My question is, so if the Michigan legislature decided that the state capitol in Lansing would be a gun-free zone, would that, in your legal opinion, be a violation of the Constitution?
Not really. I mean, it might be challenged there in Michigan. But that goes to your position on the 10th Amendment. That's what the people of Michigan passed, okay? Here in Florida, you can't do that in Florida. Okay? Because the Florida legislature hasn't passed it. In other words, it hasn't, doesn't allow it. I believe it's allowable in Texas. I believe. So that's where the 10th Amendment comes into play. My summation is the following. That, and I got a couple things, and hopefully I'm not running over, but that Black Americans should not allow any entity to hijack a constitutional right to make it exclusively for them or make it look like it's exclusively for them. You know, the old adage is, if you don't use it, you lose it, which I believe is a bunch of mess for this, but one could make that argument. That's the first thing. We've got to embrace all of our rights. I mean, if nothing else, the Dred Scott v. Sanford Supreme Court decision of 1857, where Chief Justice Taney, the way you pronounce it.
It looks like Taney to me. I never understood that. It looks like Taney. I don't know why it's Taney.
Yeah. It's a Maryland thing. All right? He's from Maryland, Baltimore. Taney wrote that the Constitution was never intended for Black people because we were not humans. We were chattel. Okay? And it took not the Emancipation Proclamation. It took bloodshed, the Civil War, the use of firearms to ensure freedoms of Black Americans. That's the first thing. Meaning the ending of slavery. The second thing is this. The two most prominent constitutional Second Amendment scholars are Black American men. They are the scholars of this nation. One is Professor Robert Cottrell, C-O-T-T-R-O-L. He's at the George Washington University in D.C. He was my criminal law professor at Rutgers Law School, Camden, back when I was there. And this man once said, and that's what got me going, he said that if every law-abiding Black American had firearms, you would have less crime in the Black community because they'd be able to defend themselves against criminals. I never heard that before, never thought about it before, and never heard it from a Black man's mouth, and it just blew my mind open, and it reinforced everything that I knew, because I knew about my parents and how my parents acted. The second scholar is Professor Nicholas Johnson at Fordham Law School in New York. Nicholas Johnson has written the only law school textbook on the Second Amendment. He's a Black American man, and he's one of the scholars on the Constitution, constitutional law, and the Second Amendment.
I want to thank today's guest, Joseph Haydens Davis. The Public Morality welcomes your comments. You can contact me at Byron@publicmorality.org. That's Byron, B-Y-R-O-N, at publicmorality.org. You can follow me on Facebook as well as Twitter. The archive broadcast can be found on iTunes and SoundCloud. Once again, I want to thank Elvin Jenkins and Michael Burns at WJAB in Huntsville, Alabama, for allowing us to broadcast The Public Morality at their studios. The Public Morality is produced at WSNC on the campus of Winston-Salem State University. In the words of Martin Luther King, we may have come on different ships, but we're in the same boat now. For all of us at the Public Morality, I'm Byron Williams.